I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're speaking with Neil Taylor, who's a travel writer and a Londoner. We're talking about changes in London, looking into its changing ethnic influences. Neil, good to have you back.
Good to be with you, Rick.
Now, Neil, when you look at your city, how has it changed ethnically in the last generation?
In a sense, it was not an ethnic city when I was born here in the late 1940s. One could say it was 100% English. Few groups of refugees in the outskirts from the First World War and from the Second World War. I now live in central London, and it is a total mix. If I go west from my apartment, I find myself in a Middle Eastern area. If I go east, I first of all go through a Chinese street, an Italian street, a Turkish street and a Cypriot street. So really, I cross most of Europe and most of Asia within a 2 or 3 mile walk of my house.
Now, what are the pros and cons of that if you live in London?
In a sense, I only see the pros, that when I grew up as a child, there was English food, a little bit of American food coming. I remember the excitement of the first glass of Coke and the first hamburger. But now within 3 miles of my house, if I go west, I find Persian areas, I find Lebanese areas, Syrian restaurants. If I go east, we're now in Broadcasting House, where the BBC transmits from, and immediately in the vicinity here, there's a Chinese road, an Italian road, a Turkish road, and a Greek road. So it is a really international city now.
You know, in the old days, English food was kind of notorious for being predictable and bland, and you certainly can't say that about English food now when you remember that English food is really Indian and Chinese and Pakistani and Lebanese and the whole bag, isn't it?
It is, yes, a complete cross-section. I think it'd be very difficult to name a nationality and not be able to find a restaurant for it here in London. That's true. One might not find a whole street of, say, Argentinian restaurants or Ethiopian ones, but if that's what you particularly want, within a couple of miles of Broadcasting House, where we are now, I am sure you could find it.
Now, in New York, you have, like, ethnic quarters or districts, but in London, it's more like ethnic streets.
That's the major difference, yes, because I remember from when I first went to New York and was so surprised that there was a Chinese quarter and an Italian quarter. And one had to walk quite specifically from one to the other when my early joys of New York was having the first course in Chinatown and then moving down to the Italian quarter and having a suite there. Well, in London, in a sense, it's much easier because it is streets or even street sides. One side could be Chinese and the other side could be Turkish. Such a strong mixture.
It's a beautiful sort of unfolding, changing cityscape. And how does that happen where one street would become Lebanese and the next street would become Persian or something like this?
I think it's like with other shops. The antiquarian bookshops congregate together. The general antique furniture shops congregate together, perhaps. So you go to a certain area for going Chinese or going Italian. It has that logic, I think, that one might think, well, do they want competitors? But on the other hand, if there are six good restaurants in a particular street, it's known as the area to be in.
I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're speaking with Neil Taylor. And Neil is a Londoner who writes guidebooks to Berlin and to Estonia and to the Baltic region, published by Footprints Guides and Brat Guides. We've got John on the phone in Sonoma, California. John, thanks for your call.
Hey, Rick. How you doing?
Good. Got a comment or a question for Neil?
Yes, I was just in London. We went to see the 25th anniversary of Les Miserables there at the O2. And one thing I was so impressed with was the Canary Wharf area and the tube stations at Canary Wharf and North Greenwich. It was like being in a futuristic world or something on a movie. And I think we've fallen so far behind here in this country. And we stayed out in Acton Town, which we really enjoyed. Very cheap, had a hotel for $90 a night with breakfast. And it was just a wonderful experience, and the ethnic diversity was really overwhelming. And I hadn't been there since 1998. I've been to London many times, but the last time was in 98, and I could really see the difference.
That's quite a change.
Yes.
Neil, have you been out to those, have you taken the tube out to the Docklands?
Oh, very much so, yes. There's our London City Airport there, a very convenient connection for other places in the UK and for Europe. And also going west to sort of Acton, because there you do have plenty of ethnic communities living in Acton. Of course, Acton is a poorer community. Canary Wharf is a richer one. So you would get a lovely contrast getting on the tube in Acton and then 45 minutes later getting out in the affluence of Canary Wharf.
As a tourist, it's really important to go out to these modern working suburbs where, you know, I find in London, Neil, maybe you can comment on this, they preserve the cityscape in downtown London more, but you take that fast tube out to the Docklands and you see the Manhattan of London really sprouting up to the east of downtown.
Yes, you do. But equally, you can see areas that are 100 years old or 200 years old. You can go north to Hampstead, a little bit further to the Hampstead Garden suburb. Now, Hampstead is very much 18th and 19th century. The Hampstead Garden suburb, just the other side of the famous Hampstead Heath, that was built at the beginning of the 20th century. There are many other similar areas of London where a particular time, particular period, is guarded architecturally.
Right. Hey, John, thanks for your call.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Speaking of changes, Neil, the big news, I think, is the coming of the Olympics in 2012. A pretty low-end, working-class neighborhood or town suburb called Stratford, not the Stratford we all think of as tourists where Shakespeare was born, but Stratford, just outside of London, is now being completely worked over, isn't it?
That's right, yes. It's going from a miserable sort of run-down 19th-century suburb with lots of bomb damage to the 21st century. It's going to miss out the 20th century very largely.
And that's going to have an impact on the minorities that live out there.
Oh, very much so. And, of course, a permanent legacy. That's what's so important about the Olympics, that people complain, of course, about the money that it's costing, but the benefits are going to last for decades, perhaps even for centuries, if the buildings are strong enough.
Well, I think all of the housing made for the Olympics is destined to be affordable housing for residents of Stratford after the Olympics are long gone.
That's right, it will be, yes. And the facilities are so important. Obesity is a problem in your country and in mine, and there will be the training facilities for the young to get fit and to keep fit.
Brilliant. And there'll be good public transit to connect people in Stratford, once run down, now 21st century futuristic suburb, to downtown London efficiently and economically.
Yes, and not only to downtown London, of course to Paris. There'll be the stop on the Eurostar at Stratford, the fast trains going to the east and the north, and it's very close to London City Airport, and plenty of local buses too. So a bit of everything as far as public transport is concerned.
You know, think about that. You could conceivably commute from Paris to events at the Olympics with the
Oh, yes,
Eurostar.
I'm sure people will. There's no doubt about that.
That is really, really hard to imagine, and it is so today. This is what's happening, and I got that sense when I traveled outside of the basic tourist attractions in London. Now, we're talking about the ethnic makeup of London, and all over Europe, well, everybody's got this Gastarbeiter sort of dynamic. You know, the Germans sort of made the term when the Turks would come in and do a wealthy country's low-end jobs, guest workers. We've got a lot of guest workers who will work in our fields and clean our homes cheaper than what a lot of us would work for. And that's just sort of a reality in this world. In London, you have this huge influx of ethnic groups. Is this a post-colonial thing, or is this people looking for opportunity, or how do you explain this huge influx of people from all over the world to London, of all places?
It started as a colonial legacy that we allowed people from our former empire to come and work here. And in fact, in the late 1950s, we really encouraged them to do so, the work that we locals were not prepared to do. So they came from the West Indies, they came from India. In the case of Hong Kong, they were first refugees from China and then saw opportunities in coming to Britain. Much more recently, it's been the EU and the freedom of movement in the European Union that people from Eastern Europe, from Southern Europe, can basically all come to Britain and work here. And of course, a lot of British people now go and work elsewhere in the EU.
Now, there's a lot of ugliness to the post-colonial realities of European international empires. And I think it's fascinating to compare how France is dealing with it and how Britain is dealing with it. And my hunch is there's a little bit of difference between England's relationship with its former colonies than other European powers because of this concept of the Commonwealth. It gives you a little advantage and a little more, maybe, compassion. Can you talk about that a bit?
I would think so, yes. I mean, the French Empire ended with wars. There was the Dien Bien Phu battle in 1954, which then led to the tragic involvement of the United States in Vietnam, a long war in Algeria in the late 1950s, the complication that the colonies were all occupied during the Second World War when France itself was occupied and then came back to being colonies. I think the transition in Britain was much smoother, starting immediately after the Second World War with India and Pakistan and then continuing through the 1950s and 1960s. So perhaps that has led to better relations between the former colonies than France has.
Because among colonial powers, this notion of the Commonwealth was unique to Britain, I believe.
Yes, certainly. I mean, the French do have links with their former territories, and of course they still have current territories. They're very keen to stress that Martinique and Guadeloupe in the Caribbean are what they call overseas provinces, département outre-mer, so parts of France which are not actually part of the mainland, but have the privileges of being part of domestic France and using the euro, and of course citizens from there can then work elsewhere in the EU and have all the benefits of being a citizen of an EU country, even though they're thousands of miles from mainland France.
How do you see the issue of immigrants coming in and either assimilating or squatting?
Well, I think squatting is unfair because large numbers of them do assimilate. I think the problem is that a lot of local people, in fact, lose their assimilation. The immigrants come and work hard, and local people who've perhaps been exploiting the benefit system get jealous of the immigrants simply because the immigrants get up early, realise they have to work hard, it's a tough environment, and very rarely opt out. Too many local people just sort of opt out and live on benefits, and I think that's perhaps a US problem too.
Right.
How do you encourage people to work whilst providing benefits for those who genuinely need them because they actually can't work or can't find work?
It's a complicated issue for Europe as well as the United States. I know in much of Europe, people are concerned that immigrant communities come in and have no interest in embracing the local culture, learning the language, or letting their kids engage with the mainstream community, and that ruffles local feathers. Is that a concern in London?
I don't think so. Partly, of course, because English is such a crucial language internationally. Mm-hmm. So one of the major reasons for people coming to work here is that they hope to improve their English, because that is a marketable tool anywhere else. If they go and work in a restaurant in Greece or in Spain or in Italy, they will need to speak English because that's the language most of the foreign tourists will speak. I mean, if, say, a tourist from Germany or Sweden goes to Spain, they are very likely going to want the hotel staff to speak English. That will be the common language. The Swedish person won't speak Spanish, and of course the Spanish person or the immigrant working there is not going to speak Swedish. But English will be the bond between them. So this is a great bonus here, that people come and feel they have to study, have to learn, have to get English language qualifications, whether they stay here or whether they return home and get a better job, because back home, whichever country they've come from, English language is a marketable skill there too.
You know, you just straightened something out in my mind there, because I've got friends in the Netherlands who are frustrated with their immigrants that come into the Netherlands and never learn any Dutch. But if you're an immigrant going to London, you're there to learn English because that's your window into a future of opportunity.
Yes, I mean, I feel that these people, probably your colleagues in Holland, are thinking, well, Dutch isn't spoken anywhere else. Why should I bother? If I can get a menial job here for a year, I may then move to France or may then move to Germany. And
there
we have
go.
The advantage, in a sense, that people coming here have to speak English, because there's no other possible common language here.
That's right. And that gets back to my original observation. Next time you walk down the streets in London, listen to the language. The first language of London is English as a second language.
That's right, yes. I mean, perhaps you have the parallel with Spanish in the US, that you can probably have a very good career just speaking Spanish, but there isn't a similar example in the UK. There's no point in having fluent French or fluent German, even though there are neighbouring countries, because too few people here would be able to use them as a second language.
Neil Taylor, thanks for sharing your perspective on multi-ethnic London.
Thank you, Rick. It's been nice talking to you.
Rick Steves has spent a third of his adult life in Europe researching and writing guidebooks. His classic, Europe Through the Back Door, freshly updated this year, teaches the skills of smart travel. At Rick Steves' online travel store, you'll also find guidebooks for London, England, Great Britain, Scotland, and Ireland. To learn more about Rick's guidebooks for this region and beyond, visit the travel store at ricksteves.com.